Welcome to Treasure the Word. Here are some insights on Psalms 9-16. Psalms 9 and 10 were very likely composed as a single acrostic poem, later divided in two, and together they wrestle with a question every generation of believers eventually asks. Why does God sometimes seem to stand at a distance while the wicked prosper? Why, Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? 10:1 is about as direct a complaint as Scripture allows itself. But the psalm does not stay there. It ends with confidence that the Lord is King forever and ever, 10:16, and with a promise that steadies the whole complaint. You, Lord, hear the desire of the afflicted. You encourage them, and you listen to their cry, defending the fatherless and the oppressed, 10:17-18. Some older translations render this promise almost paradoxically, that the needy shall not always be forgotten, rather than will never be forgotten. That more literal phrasing actually captures something important. God's people are not promised an absence of suffering, only that the suffering will not be permanent, that it will not have the final word. That distinction matters enormously to anyone who has suffered a long time without visible relief. Psalm 14 makes one of the bluntest statements in the entire Old Testament about the human condition apart from grace. There is no one who does good, not even one. 14:1-3. It is no accident that this psalm appears twice in the Psalter, nearly word for word, again as Psalm 53, repetition in Hebrew poetry functioning as emphasis, a way of making sure a hard truth is not missed the first time it is read. Paul later builds a portion of his argument in Romans 3 directly on this psalm, and its unflinching verdict that left to ourselves, none of us seeks God, is precisely what makes grace, when it does come, so entirely undeserved and so entirely necessary. Psalm 16 turns from indictment to confidence, and it is here that David makes a claim far larger than his own biography can account for. You will not abandon me to the realm of the dead, nor will you let your faithful ones see decay. David did, in fact, die and see decay. His tomb was still known and visited generations later. Peter makes exactly this point in his sermon at Pentecost, arguing that David, being a prophet, spoke here not ultimately of himself but of the resurrection of Christ, Acts 2:25-31. This is one of several psalms in Book 1 that the New Testament reads as messianic, written by David out of his own experience, but reaching, under the Spirit's inspiration, toward a fulfillment David himself could not have fully understood. Threaded through this chapter's psalms is also a quieter, more personal theme, prayer itself, and the confidence with which we're invited to bring it. I call on you, my God, for you will answer me, 7:6, read together with this section, reflects a settled trust that God hears, not because our requests are impressive, but because, as sons and daughters who have received God's own Spirit, we have been given genuine access to Him, Romans 8:15-16. That confidence is never presented in these psalms as confidence in getting whatever we ask for. It is confidence in the character of the one we are asking. Thank you for spending this time in Psalms 9-16. Until next time, keep treasuring the Word.